Good morning, everybody. Bio 231, February 12th. So let's get started. If you look at that schedule right there, I know you guys can talk loud, but I can even talk louder and louder and louder and louder. Okay, so hold up. If you gotta have a conversation, please step outside so you don't interrupt anybody. Okay. Okay. Thank you. Let's look at the schedule. Make sure everybody's going to be prepared. So today's the 12th. Our next class meeting is not on Monday because Monday is a holiday, right? Okay. And campus is closed, so you can't even go to the library or anything like that. And then exactly one week from today is your first lecture exam. All right, so make sure, what do you need for that? I forgot. You need something. You need a Scantron, right? Just the long, narrow one. And it's got two sides. It's got 100 questions. So you bubble your answers in with a number 2 lead pencil. And if you make a mistake, then you need to erase that really clearly and completely. So your eraser has to be a lot better than your pencil. And I gave you some references for what kind of erasers in the syllabus. But in any case, you should check yourself to make sure your eraser is working properly. Get a piece of paper, make a line with that pencil you're going to use, same pencil, erase it with your eraser. And if it does not erase that line, and worse yet, if it smudges that line, throw the eraser away, because you might pick it up and bring it to class by accident. And when you throw it away, of course, then get one that you know is going to work, like one that's in the syllabus, or buy one and check it out before you pay for it, okay? All right. And a picture ID. Make sure you have a picture ID. Please don't send me any email saying, do I really need a picture ID? Because the answer is going to be, please read the syllabus. Okay? So it's really clear in there. What else? I'm going to try to get to class a little bit early on that day. So we're going to start the exam before 10:50. That will give some people a little bit extra time. So I'm going to run down right after lab. The room is open. So as soon as I open the room, come on in, and I'll start passing tests out. So if you need to study a little bit more, just stay out in the hall. And then you can come take the exam anytime you want. Even give yourself an hour or 15 minutes to take it if you need that study time. But I'd recommend for you to spend the whole time in here taking the test. Not everybody will. Some people will be done in a half hour. Some people will take the whole 2 hours or whatever. All right, 100 questions on the test. And how do you prepare for that test? What's your number one resource? Study guide. Yeah, because it tells you exactly what page numbers, what end of chapter questions I like that I could put on the test, the exam figures, what figures in the chapter that I might erase all the labels off of, put on the test. And then you have to relabel them by matching, right? So it's not going to be coming up with a name, but you can match from one column to that figure. And there's going to be 100 questions. There's going to be some figures, I don't know what the percentage is, probably at least 30% of the test is figures. And you know what? I bet if you have time to study, everybody can get 100% on that part of the test, the labeling figures, unless you're a totally non-visual person. Then you might have problems with that. But most people do pretty well visually. All right, so just plan on getting 100% on that. That gives you some breathing room on other parts of the test. All right, so kind of use that. Oh, here's another thing. If you know how to label a figure, when you get to a question on the other, a multiple choice question about that figure, guess what? You got the answer key right there. So use your labeling of those figures to answer other questions, right? So there's a nice interaction. And then practicums we have the week after that. All right. Anybody have a question on the schedule and what you need for the exam in 1 week from today? Pretty good. Okay. All right. So we do have one more chapter to cover, and that is chapter 6. Right, that's an introductory chapter to bones, and there are all the slides that I want to show, and here is just a Word file of some things that I want to cover. Okay, so let's move this up and start going through this. All right, so what makes up the skeletal system? Okay, yeah, for sure, you're going to say bones, your skeleton. Right, and your skeleton is made up of bones, but there's some other pieces to it as well. Right, there's cartilage. We've looked at cartilage, and it's a connective tissue just like bone. It has many similarities. It has lacunae, and it has cells inside those lacunae. The names of the cells are different depending on whether it's cartilage or bone.
Because cartilage and bone have two different names. What's the name for a cartilage cell? That is a chondrocyte, right? So chondro means cartilage. What's the name for a bone cell? Osteocyte, because osteo means bone, right? Okay. Okay, so cartilage sometimes has fibers in it, sometimes not. Sometimes it has really strong fibers, sometimes they're elastic fibers. Bones have fibers in them too. Cartilage, they're strong. I don't know of any bone that has elastic fibers. Bones really shouldn't bend too much. If you want a structure like a bone to bend, what would you rely on? Not a bone, but you'd use cartilage to do that. All right, so bones really are not bendy. They're not really designed to bend. Okay, and a ligament is dense regular connective tissue. And dense regular connective tissue could be a tendon or it could be a ligament. And a tendon is a connection between a muscle and a bone. Since it's a muscle, we don't talk about it in this chapter because this is skeletal chapter. But a ligament is a bone-to-bone connection. And since we're talking about bones, a bone-to-bone connection is still a part of the skeletal system. Nonetheless, it's still dense, regular connective tissue. All right, so let's talk about, because we're really interested in physiology in here, let's talk about some of the important physiological reasons why we have bones. All right, so number one, for support, bones are really strong. They're rigid and strong. And even more importantly, let's introduce you to the term compression. What does it mean to compress something? Squeeze down, make it smaller. Not pull apart, not twist, but squeeze down. All right, so bone is really good from preventing the squeezing down. We call that compression. Concrete is really good. It resists compression. All right, so it can bear great weight. Of course, the farther down your bones are in your skeleton, inferior, then the bigger and stronger they have to be. So for instance, you have a number of vertebrae in your vertebral column. Which ones are kind of small and delicate? The ones down below or the ones up high? The superior ones, because they're not holding up a lot of weight. The ones that are inferior have to hold up more weight, so they're bigger and stronger. And that also kind of tells you, when you exercise a bone, when you put stress on a bone, it gets bigger and stronger, which is one of the reasons why that can help prevent osteoporosis from happening. That's also one of the reasons why people hate this class. Okay? We're going to talk about osteoporosis in just a second. I'll make that a lot clearer. All right, so bone is rigid and strong, can hold up a lot of weight. Cartilage, on the other hand, is firm but flexible, like making up your nose, rib cage, and it's bendable in most cases. The nice thing about cartilage is that it's a lot lighter than bone. Even though it's not as strong, it's a lot lighter. If all the cartilage in your body was converted into bone, you need a lot more calories every day just to lug all that extra bone around, right? So that's a huge advantage. Okay, another thing bone is good for, protection. Number two, protection. The skull, we're looking at that in lab today, and we take the top of the skull off, and there's a big cavity inside the skull. What's inside that cavity? Tell me what the name of that cavity is. That is the cavity itself? I think that was an extra credit assignment even. Yeah, cranial cavity, right? The top of the skull is called the calvarium. You take the calvarium off, and you look down into the cranial cavity. And so you see the skull really is some armor plating. And that armor plating is protecting your brain, right? So that's important. So skull. Rib cage is the same thing. Not such a continuous armor plating, but there's still some armor plating there. What is it protecting, the rib cage? Visceral organs like your lungs and your heart. Okay, thymus gland. All right, those are all, nobody wants to give their heart away for any reason, right? Very important organ inside your body. Rib cage protects that, as well as the sternum, right? Protects that. Woo, you don't know what a sternum is yet, sorry. But maybe you know it's the breastbone, right? It's a big, strong bone right there. And the vertebral column. Vertebral column is a whole bunch of bones, but they line up in a certain way so that they mostly surround another organ, which is very delicate, which is the spinal cord, right? So rib cage is armor plating, protects the spinal cord. And I'm really glad that we have this armor plating. I certainly wouldn't be here today if I didn't have this armor plating on my body. Okay? Because I've seen stars many times, and when you see stars, if you didn't have a skull, your brain would just kind of splat out all over the place, right? So that's a good thing. Probably all of you have done that same thing. Number three, movement. So we have
You have skeleton, and attached to the skeleton are certain kinds of cells that are specialized for contraction. And those are called muscle cells, right? And you're familiar with that. You know what they look like underneath the microscope. A muscle is attached to a bone with dense, regular connective tissue that we call a tendon. Right? And so when these muscles contract, it pulls on bones and it moves your bones around. Right? So it allows for voluntary motion. Right? Not involuntary, unless there's damage maybe to a skeletal muscle. You might have a twitch or a spasm in a muscle, but usually it's under voluntary control. And bones can move with respect to each other because there are joints. There are special connections between bones that move. We call those articulations or joints. And in a couple chapters, we're going to look at the structure of some joints, a whole bunch of joints. And they got some pretty nifty features to them. And also, when we think of movement, we want to think of non-movement as well. So when I say movement right here, I want you to think about bones that are moving, but also, how do we keep bones together that are not supposed to move? That's still a concept of movement, but it's like it's the reverse concept. Well, there are ligaments that join bones together, and it prevents motion. It stabilizes that joint. They're not designed for motion. And dense regular connective tissue that joins a bone to a bone is called a ligament. Right? So a ligament, in most cases, prevents or limits movement between two bones. So we put that under movement right here. And like right now, you're not really moving, right? And so you have a bunch of muscles. Do you have any muscles that are contracting right now, even though you're not moving? Oh, yeah, because if all the muscles in your body would relax right now, what would happen? Well, your head would bounce off the table, and then it would bounce off the chair, and then it would bounce off the floor, right? So you need postural muscles, right? So those are important. So they connect to those bones and keep them from moving. All right, storage. You're kind of familiar with some of these things. One of the basic building blocks of bone is a metal ion. I know it's an ion because it has that little positive sign right there. It means it has an electrical charge on it. And that Ca stands for, you don't have to know this symbology, but if you've taken a chemistry class, you maybe know what that means. So I'll tell you right now, that is calcium. Yeah, that's calcium. That's just an elemental calcium. Right? And so it stores calcium for you. It can also store another type of mineral. We call this inorganic phosphate. See that little I right there? That stands for inorganic. The chemical symbol for phosphorus is P. But when I say inorganic phosphate, we have to think of some other oxygen atoms that are attached to it. So it's a little bit more complicated kind of molecule. We call that inorganic phosphate. So it stores inorganic phosphate, and it also stores fat. Right, in adults, not in neonates or pre-adolescents, right? Because there are different kinds of tissues that we find inside bones. Soft tissues inside bones we call bone marrow, and it can be either yellow or red. And in this particular case, we're talking about yellow marrow, and that is adipose tissue. So that's a storage form of energy. In young people, that bone marrow is what we call red bone marrow, which is responsible for making red blood cells. But we're talking about storage. Right? We don't store red blood cells in red bone marrow. But we do store fat in yellow bone marrow. Ah, but that leads me to the next item. Okay, and that is blood cell production, especially maybe just think of red blood cells right at the moment. Okay, the interior parts of bones and their cavities filled with marrow. In this particular case, it's going to be red bone marrow, and red bone marrow is for producing red blood cells, which is one of the reasons why we call it red bone marrow. And if you have a tissue in your body that's responsible for making cells, either white blood cells or red blood cells, we call that a hemopoiesis, kind of a weird sounding word, hemopoiesis, that's just making blood cells. And probably this hemo here means that is making a red cell in particular, hemopoiesis. All right, so what else do we say right here? Oh, yeah, platelets, all that good stuff. So what kind of tissue is a hemopoietic tissue? It's one that does what? Makes red blood cells. Yeah, it makes red blood cells. All right, so bone is important for all those reasons. Right, so you're probably going to learn that one organ has all kinds of different functions. Even though we might think of bone as just being important for supporting our weight, it has many other functions in our body.
Another example would be the kidney. You think the kidney maybe just cleans your blood of toxic compounds, but it has many other important purposes too that we're going to see in this class. All right, so let's look at the figure over here. This kind of shows the skeleton, right? All these bones make up the skeleton. And I see some other things in some colors. The blue color, okay, represents cartilage in different parts of your body, and in particular hyaline cartilage. Remember hyaline cartilage, if you remember a picture of what that looks like? Does it have some fibers, no fibers, or a lot of fibers? No fibers, right? Just ground substance. Kind of soft and squishy, kind of slippery. Those cover the ends of bones, like I see right here. Okay, and the connections between the bony parts of a rib and the sternum right here, this is hyaline cartilage. Very light, bendable. Okay, some other cartilages are super strong, like you see the fibrocartilage. Fibrocartilage, I don't know, can you see any red right in here? That's a really small area. That's a meniscus in the knee, that's fibrocartilage, right? The pubic symphysis, a joint between two hip bones, that's fibrocartilage. So there's a joint right there. And that's got to be a really strong cartilage. And there's also a piece of fibrocartilage in the TMJ. Anybody remember what TMJ stands for? We never say it out loud because it's too temporomandibular joint. That's it, right? And nobody says it like that. So TMJ, don't freak out, you know what it is. It is the temporomandibular joint. So as a matter of fact, if somebody ever lays TMJ on you, you could say, oh, are you talking about the temporomandibular joint? And they're going to go, oh, yeah, I am. Okay, so go ahead, slow them down a little bit. And they'll be happy you know that. All right, so types of cartilage we looked at over here. Hyaline cartilage looks like glass, kind of translucent glass. And it's living tissue. What kind of cells are in cartilage? Would you say an osteocyte? You wouldn't want to say osteocyte, because where do you find an osteocyte? In bone, right? And we're talking cartilage. What kind of cell is in cartilage? A chondrocyte. Anytime you hear that term chondro, that means cartilage. Okay? And just like in bone, these chondrocytes are in a little pit. What's the name of a little pit or bubble within that tissue? A lacunae, right? It's a little microscopic bubble that that cell is in. Okay, it does have some fibers, but they're soluble, they're dissolved in the matrix, so you don't really see them very much, they're not a precipitate. Here are some examples of where you would find hyaline cartilage. And you've looked at trachea in lab for hyaline cartilage in particular. All right, another kind of elastic. What's the cool thing about elastic cartilage? It's easily bent, and then when you let go, it goes back to its location, right? As long as you don't overdo it, there are some examples. Fibrocartilage, of course, is the strongest. And what kind of fiber is the strongest fiber of all of them you have learned about so far? Collagen is the strongest, right? So fibrocartilage has a lot of collagen in it. So that resists compression. Collagen also, and even better, collagen resists tension, right? Because they're strong fibers, they don't stretch. So when they're aligned in cartilage or in some kind of structure like a bone, okay, you can't pull that bone apart because it has collagen in it. And we're going to see why that is important in a second. Okay, same thing for this concrete over here. I'm going to talk about that little column in this room a lot. Concrete has the same kind of property. It resists compression. Very nice. We can put a building on top of that thing. And it's strong for compression. But guess what would happen to that column if we were to stretch it from end to end? It would crumble in pieces, just like that. All right, because it resists compression, but not tension. Okay. And that's why in earthquakes, buildings fall down, because in an earthquake, that thing starts to get stretched and then it breaks apart, unless it has some other kinds of metal pieces on the inside of it or a collar around the outside. So I don't know if I would sit next to that thing right there. Chances are you're okay. You're okay. You're okay for now. Just don't stretch that thing out. Okay, so what are some things that have fibrocartilage? Well, the annulus fibrosus, right? These are what make up the intervertebral discs, but not really the whole disc, but it's the outer part of a disc. There's some softer material on the inside, but the outer ring of an intervertebral disc. And here is a vertebrae, here's a vertebrae, and there's some cartilage between them, which is fibrocartilage. Right? So these things are compressed with your body weight, but they're strong because they're made out of fibrocartilage. Okay, and the meniscus of a knee, way down over here. So what kind of force is on your knee way down over here? A little bit or a lot? A lot, right? Because it's way inferior in your body. So that kind of cartilage has to be pretty strong. All right, so that's cartilage. Let's look at some types of bones. Ooh, look at all that stuff you're familiar with. Hyaline cartilage, right? Elastic fibers. That's an okay picture of fibrocartilage. Okay, types of bones. Sometimes we talk about a bone by its shape. Ah, that shouldn't be so strange because this is anatomy class, right? So we talk about things by shape and location all the time. So some bones are very large in one dimension, or we can say long in one dimension, but short in the two others, right? So this bone is short from anterior to posterior, right to left, but it's really a long bone from superior to inferior. So we call this a long bone. And so any bone that has this shape is what we call a long bone, even if it's small. Right? So you have bones in your fingers. We call these phalanges. Here's one right here in the tip of my little finger. It's very small, but guess what? It is still a long bone because it's relatively long in one dimension, but even smaller in two other dimensions. Right? So it still looks like a long bone. So a long bone doesn't have to be big, like this humerus or this femur right here. It just has to have that general shape. Right, and still be long. A flat bone, like your sternum or breastbone, flat just means that no one ever calls that a squamous bone. Okay, but there are parts of bones that we call the squamous region, but I suppose if you said that, nobody would laugh at you. Here's a flat bone, because it is flat. Right, from anterior to posterior, it's very, very flat. Okay, short bones. Maybe we have some of these short bones in our wrist, short bones in our ankle. And so these are really the same dimension no matter how you look at it, from right to left, from anterior to posterior, and also from superior to inferior. Kind of looks like a cube, right? A short bone. And then we have this thing with all kinds of jagged pieces coming out of that. And what are these projections called on a bone? Some of you know this. Yeah, all of you know this because you're going to take a quiz or have taken a quiz. These are processes, right? So some bones have a lot of processes on them. And if you're going to think of one function of a process, what would you want to think the function of a process is? Muscle attachment, right? So all of these processes here have muscles attached to them. That stabilizes your back to a large degree. But because it has a really funny shape, we call that an irregular bone. And this is looking from the side, a nice lateral view. And I think there's one more kind of bone. I see it on this slide. And it's in your list over here, but it's not on this slide. It's not, I don't see any letter designating what it is, but I see it right here. What is that? Anybody tell me what this thing is in just everyday language? That is your kneecap, right? The anatomical term for kneecap is the patella, right? So here's the patella. So this whole region could be called the patellar region. And this bone right here is within a tendon. It's completely within a tendon. There are some muscles that attach to it with ligaments, right? But it is within a tendon that goes from big, strong muscles in your anterior thigh down to this bone over here that we call the tibia. It inserts right here. And any kind of bone that we find within a tendon is completely surrounded by a tendon. We call that a sesamoid bone. Sesamoid is a bone within a tendon. You might have maybe one or two locations where you have sesamoid bones besides your knee, for instance, in your thumb. It just puts the proper angle so that these bones can move right? Because if this patella wasn't here and these muscles contracted, it would just try to pull, right? This part, this is what we call, what do we call this part of your lower appendage? What do we call this part? Remember they have different names? Okay, so what do we call this one here? Yeah, not arm. This is your leg. Here's your leg, right? Between your knee and your ankle is your leg. And then between your knee and your hip is your, not your leg. That is your, that's your thigh, right? So I want to use that terminology right now. So if the patella wasn't here, these big strong muscles in the thigh would just try to pull your leg up to where your thigh is. And that doesn't happen, all right? With this bone here, that improves the articulation. It allows you, what, that kicking motion. So instead of just pulling your leg up into your thigh, it allows for this motion right here because of that arrangement of that sesamoid bone. All right, so this might be an exam figure. I can't recall. Anybody know if this is an exam figure? Shame on you. You should know. All right, parts of a long bone. This is a really good model for you to be aware of. And my guess that either this or the next figure is an exam figure. Okay. All right, so if we look at this bone over here, does it look like an irregular bone or a flat bone or sesamoid bone or what kind of bone? By shape. Long bone. Yeah, here's a nice long bone. And I can tell by the shape, this is the bone in your arm, not your forearm, which we call the humerus. So it is a long bone. We're going to use a long bone as a model to understand how all bones are put together. All right, the tips of a long bone are what we call the... Okay, somebody say that for me. It's got a little swing to it. It's called the epiphysis. Epiphysis, right? Epiphysis. And the superior part is called the proximal epiphysis. The one that's farther away from some central location in your body, that's called the distal epiphysis. So we know what end of the bone we're talking about. That's pretty important. All right. And the bone, good morning, the bone between the epiphyses is what we call the diaphysis. It's got a little bit of a swing to it as well. All right, so diaphysis, sometimes we can call the shaft of a long bone. Shaft or diaphysis pretty much are the same thing. Surrounding a bone is a membrane. And what's the one word that you want to use when you think of bone? How about chondro? When you think of bone, you want to say osteo, right? So this membrane, even though it's a membrane, it's associated with bone, so it's an osteo something. And the term peri means surrounding when you use that word peri. So this is the periosteum because it's a membrane that completely surrounds a bone. So that's the structure. We're going to talk about its function in just a little bit. All right. And it attaches to the bone because it has these perforating fibers. So here are some collagen fibers that attach to the periosteum and also to the surface of a bone, holding it in place. Right, so we call these Sharpie's fibers or perforating fibers. You know, there's also a membrane that lines every interior cavity inside of a bone. And of course, we don't want to call that the periosteum because it's not surrounding the bone, it's on the inside. And when we want to say inside, we want to say endo, right? And of course, we want to say osteum because it's bone. So this is what we call the endosteum, right? So there's endosteum covering every little surface inside the bone right here. These two membranes. And functionally, they're a little bit different. Okay. What else do I see? Well, I see some bone that looks like a sponge. Okay. And what kind of bone do we call that? We call that spongy bone. Indeed, you're right. What do I have? What do I have for spongy bone? It's got a bunch of other names. Okay. What other name could we call it? Cancellous bone. And spongy bone is the same thing. Trabecular bone, because these little bony plates right here are called trabeculae. That little lattice, right, this like it's almost, yeah, you can see this with your naked eye, so that's gross anatomy. You can see the trabeculae within that bone, so sometimes we call that trabecular bone. And in flat bones, we call this diploe. It's spongy bone inside of a flat bone, but people call it a little bit different. Okay. On a practical exam, you realize that a structure might have a number of different names. In this particular case, what do we got? Just four names. I only require one correct name on a practicum. You don't have to write all of them because there might be 50 or 100. And that's okay because you know you're called by different names, by different people, different times of the day, different things that you're doing. Okay. I have different names. What did I tell you? What names do people call me? Doctor, that's one. Honey, that's right, they call me honey. Probably not so appropriate for you. So anyway, a structure could have different names, just like you. All right, so here we got spongy bone, but also I see some bone over here that does not look spongy, right? Does that look spongy? Indeed. We call that compact bone. Okay, well, these two different types of bone also have other names based on their location. Where you notice that spongy bone is where compared to compact bone? Okay. I see it superior here, but there's also some down here. I would like to say, since this is the surface, spongy bone is deep. Right? That's a nice anatomical term. Spongy bone is deep to compact bone. Compact bone is, what's the word you want to use? Compact bone is what to spongy bone? Superficial. That's always going to be the case, unless there's something really wrong with that bone. right? And radiologists look for that stuff all the time. All right, so we also call this bone that's inside, that's deep, of course it's spongy bone, we call that medullary bone. So bone is a living organ. How could you convince somebody that bone is a living organ? What does it have? It's got cells, that's right. It's a basic building block of life. It's got osteocytes in there, right? Okay, so it's a living organ. And any deep part of an organ is called the medulla. Like the kidney has a medulla. It's the deep part. The adrenal gland has a medulla. That's the deep part. Which then means that it also has a more superficial part. And that's got a different name. That's called the cortex. Cortex is the superficial part of any organ. Like the renal cortex, superficial part of the kidney. Adrenal cortex, superficial part of the cortex. And it has different kinds of junk in it, just like this bone. What do we find in the cortex of a bone? Ooh, what do we find in the cortex? Not the medulla, but the cortex. What kind of bone do we see in the cortex? Compact bone. I like that. Yeah. So you could say cortical bone when you're talking about compact bone, because that's where you're always going to find compact bone. And it's not even, oh, cortical. I have it right here. Yeah. So compact bone, most people refer to it as cortical bone because it's superficial. Right. Medullary bone, spongy bone, most people say spongy bone, okay, but you could refer to it any which way you want. All right, so that's what I see right here. But now look at this. I see compact bone, I see cortical bone over here, but then it goes all the way across from right to left, but also from anterior to posterior. It forms a plate at this region. And when we cut a bone open, we just see that it forms a line. We call this the epiphyseal line or epiphyseal plate because it's really a plate. All right. And why do we call it the epiphyseal line? Because it's in the epiphysis of the bone right there. Okay. Well, during development, this line right here is cartilage. It's hyaline cartilage. And the bone grows in length from superior to inferior, right in this region right here. So it grows from that cartilage area. Right? And there's going to be another one down over here. Another epiphyseal line that during development before adolescence is cartilage. All right, so what's a stronger tissue, bone or cartilage? Stronger. Bone is stronger, which means cartilage is more easily damaged. Right? So when we compress this bone, when we squeeze the epiphyses together, right, bone is designed to withstand that kind of tension, that kind of compression, but hyaline cartilage doesn't have many fibers in it. This is the part of a bone that gets damaged, right? And you might damage it severely so that this area cannot grow anymore, right? And so then what's going to happen? Let's say, just say you damage your femur, which is in your leg. Maybe we all like to do this. Maybe you did it over the weekend, sat in a swing, right? And you start swinging. You do higher and higher and higher, and that's really fun, but there's something even a lot more fun. What do? You jump off. Yeah, and you go flying through the air, and that's really cool, except the ending is not so cool because you got to land, right? You compress all those bones. And when little kids do that, sometimes they damage this epiphyseal plate. Another name for this is a growth plate. And they might damage one leg more than the other, and what would happen? One leg is longer than the other, right? And then you need a lift and a shoe so that their gait is kind of the same. So you kind of have to be aware of that. In Little League Baseball, that can be a problem as well, okay? And in the sense that not only can it not withstand compression, it cannot withstand tension. It doesn't like being pulled apart, and it can't withstand torsion. Torsion is twisting. When this bone gets twisted, it damages the epiphyseal plate. And some of you maybe have played baseball. You twist this arm when you're a pitcher. Okay, if you throw a fastball like that, that's no big deal because you're not twisting anything, right? So little leaguers are taught to throw fastballs, but not fancy pitches where you have to put a lot of spin on the ball because that twists these bones and it damages that epiphyseal plate. What kind of ball has a lot of spin to it? Curveball, yeah, sliders, all that kind of stuff. All right, so little leaguers are taught, don't try any of those fancy pitches, right? You have to go through adolescence, right, until you have a nice mature bone that can withstand that kind of, well, what's that force, that twisting force? Later on in your notes, I don't know if you can remember, I just said it once, that's called torsion. Torsion is twisting. Okay, so how does a bone grow in length? It is at the epiphyseal plate. We want to say plate, right? And it's cartilage in an immature bone. All right, so this bone right here, all right, and so here is a deep cavity. If it's a deep cavity, we call it a medullary cavity. And this medullary cavity, is it storing fat or is it producing red blood cells? This particular one right here. From the slide, you can tell. It is producing red blood cells or storing fat? Okay, it's kind of a nasty trick because usually I don't ask you by color. But what color is that?
Yellow.
Yellow, okay. And so it's not really producing red blood cells because it's not red. Usually we think of adipose tissue as being yellow. So here is a nice mature bone. It's not producing red blood cells anymore in any of us. It's storing fat for us, okay. So it's adipose tissue in the medullary cavity. So we see that. And it's surrounded by what? The endosteum right in here. Okay, so we talked about the periosteum. Here's a blood vessel that's going into this bone. And sometimes that hole in the bone, well, a hole in anything is called a foramen. And since it's bringing nutrients, sometimes we call that the nutrient foramen. And this artery goes in and distributes all of those nutrients throughout the bone. And it also removes waste products. Do I see nutrient foramen on this slide? Nutrient arteries, that's close. All right, so that's pretty good for this slide right here. Articular cartilage, hyaline cartilage. What else we want to know? Periosteum, trabecular bone. Here are some arteries and veins. So these are going from superior to inferior. Sometimes we call this the central canal of a haversian system. We're going to take a look at that in just a second. And then there are some transverse arteries that are moving, all right, from these more longitudinal arteries. They have a little bit different name. Talked about this one right here. Who's got a question on this long bone? I haven't completely finished it, but anybody got a question about what we talked about so far? We're pretty good.
So we call the epiphyseal line or epiphyseal plate.
Okay, epiphyseal line or epiphyseal plate? Okay. I would say, you know, if it's cartilage, it's going to be like a plate within the bone, right? It's going to go from left to right, anterior to posterior. It's going to be like a plate. So if it's cartilage and it's growing, most people call it a plate. But after it, here's a term that I haven't used. After it ossifies, what does that mean? Turns from cartilage to bone. After it ossifies and we open up a bone, it looks like a line. So usually we call it a line when we look at it like this, but during development, we really know it's a plate. So sometimes we use that terminology. Plate versus line, okay, yeah. And it's a weird word in terms of its pronunciation. So is diaphysis, right, because you got to have that little swing in there. Okay. All right, so I can see some nice compact bone. I can see some medullary bone right here. Now, do you see all these little circles in this compact bone? We don't see a whole lot in spongy bone, but we do in compact bone. I was just looking to see if we call that nutrient foramen. Not on this slide. All right, well, I think you recognize that in when we were doing histology in lab. This is that haversian system, and here's a haversian canal or central canal. So we want to look at that thing in a little bit more detail. Oh, here's a flat bone, right? It's really thin. And so here we see diploe, which is what? Trabecular bone and a flat bone. Oh, is it trabeculae? Those are those bony plates. Okay, here's a really nice exam figure, because now we can look a little bit more detail, almost microscopic detail. Yeah, it's a microscopic detail. You need a microscope to see these, right? The haversian systems right here. A haversian system has another name, and it starts with osteo. Sometimes we call that an osteon, right? Osteon has a central canal with blood vessels, arteries, veins, and nerves. And then it has various layers, these circular layers. And remember, this is just a cross-section. So on cross-section, what looks like a circle? What is the object? What is
a tube?
Yeah, so these really are tubes. So we have a tube with inside a tube with inside of a tube, right, inside of a tube. And that's what they would look like on longitudinal sections. So what's the advantage of a tube? There's a mechanical reason for a tube. What's really cool about a tube? They don't compress, right? So if I were to grab somebody's pen, I could grab somebody's pen. I got a pencil right here. Okay, so here I have a pencil, and it's kind of like a tube, right? It's really, really long. If I were to bend this pencil like that, I could snap it pretty easily, all right? But if I compress it from top to bottom, could I break it? You know what? It would go through my hand before I could break it. A tube is really strong just by its nature. It just does not compress, right? So if you have a bicycle frame and you don't want that frame to compress, what do you make it out of? Tubes. Okay, so tubes don't compress. Well, bone is sort of like that, but it is, you could think of it as a super tube, but it's not even a super tube. It's a hyper tube. And, you know, it's not even a hyper tube. It's a super hyper tube, which means what? It's a tube inside of a tube inside of a tube, and it's surrounded by even more tubes, right? So it's really strong. Not only does it have calcium, but it's strong because of all of those tubes. These tubes are what we call, in cross-section, they look like lamellae. They just look like layers. But remember, they're really a tube. So these things here, since they go around the whole bone, we call these circumferential lamellae, right? The ones that are make up an osteon or a haversian system, right? We don't call those circumferential. We call those concentric lamellae. Now, you might have that designation in your book. Here is labeled just a lamellae, but those are concentric. These are circumferential. So they're just a little bit different. Do I have that in your notes? I bet I do someplace. I haven't found it. Ooh. Microscopic? Here. Circumferential lamellae, so you don't have to spell it out. And what about concentric lamellae? Right there. Concentric lamellae are the narrow diameter ones, right, that layer together to make an osteon. All right, there's that central canal. So here is, we're looking at compact bone. And it has a building block. So let's work with that just a second. What's a building block of an organ? Close. Tissue. What's a building block of a tissue? Cell. Okay, what's a building block of a cell? Organelles, right? So I think it's really nice for you guys to think of building blocks of things. In my mind, it kind of makes more sense. Like, what's the building block of life?
Cell.
Now that's a cell. Perfect. Okay, the building block of compact bone is an osteon. Okay, so if we know what an osteon is, we pretty much know how all compact bone goes together, right? Like if you know something about a cell, you know something about all life. So it's a really handy concept. So we want to become a little bit more familiar with this osteon. What else haven't I talked about yet on this particular slide? Oh, all right, so here are those Sharpey's fibers once again, holding the periosteum onto this cortical bone. All right, so here is the central canal with these arteries. This canal that's transverse, the perforating canal, sometimes we call Volkmann's canals as well. All right, so a Volkmann's canal is different than a haversian canal. Haversian is longitudinal, a Volkmann is in transverse perspective. Let's look at an osteon in a little bit more detail. Oh, that's nice, because now we can see cells, which are osteocytes, and they are in lacunae. See this little pit right here? That's a lacuna, and there's a cell. Here's a nucleus of that osteocyte. Okay, when we look at compact bone, it's not completely solid. It has these little cracks in it, but you know what? These don't make the bone really weak. They're supposed to be there, and we call these canaliculi. Right, one is a canaliculus. And it's important because when there are nutrients and oxygen in this artery or capillary out over here, there's got to be a way for these nutrients to get through this bone to get out to this cell way out over here. And if it was solid bone like this table or the seat you're sitting on, things couldn't diffuse through it. So there's got to be a passageway. That passageway is, or out are these canaliculi. And not only that, but the canaliculi also can communicate or allow for communication between neighboring cells. So it's a way that these cells are connected together. Right? They can pass information on nutrients, waste products, and things like that. So those canaliculi are important to be there. All right, so what else do I see? That's pretty much it. The lamellae, lacunae, osteocytes. Nice. So this whole thing, I see like one quarter of an osteon. Yeah.
Why the bone? The bone needs the artery to bring the
carbon dioxide?
Yeah.
Well, here's a cell, right? A cell is a building block of
Life.
That's right. So this cell is living. And in order for a cell to be living, it needs oxygen, needs nutrients like glucose. And there's mitochondria in here. Mitochondria take that glucose, produce carbon dioxide out of it, which is toxic to us. So the cell has to get rid of that carbon dioxide. And that goes through these canaliculi to capillaries over here. And then, of course, we breathe that out of our body. We breathe in oxygen, and that nourishes these cells. All right, so bone is, that's a really important concept. Bone, in some sense, is like that pillar over there. Okay, but in another sense, it's totally different. What can you tell me about that column? Is it alive or not?
No.
It is not alive. It has no cells in it. Mm-hmm. Bone is alive. Mm-hmm. Has a lot of living cells in it. So bone has blood vessels. Mm-hmm. What about that column there?
No
blood vessels, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. So that's a big difference between them. And has a couple other differences, which I'll mention in just a little bit. Okay? Okay. I tell you what, here's a nice concept. If you want to make that column stronger in terms of compression, what could you do to it?
Rebar.
Yeah, you could put some rebar in there. That will help in tension, that resists tension. But in terms of compression, instead of making it a rectangle, what could you do? Make it a tube, make it circular. That's kind of what I was thinking of, right? If you make it circular, then it's going to be strong, like this, it's going to be stronger just as a result. Probably cheaper to make like that, I would guess. Right. Okay. Sorry about those you sitting over there next to that thing. Okay. Okay. All right. What about, let's see, what else do I want to look at the next slide over here. Yeah, we see some nice micrographs. So could you tell me what kind of tissue this is right here by looking at it?
Bone.
And don't forget CT because it's a connective tissue, right? So give me the specific and general name as well. All right. Let me see. Let me look. I don't want to see that. Put that away. But here it is. I have it over here. Never mind. Is there anything else I want to say? No, we're doing good with that. Okay, let's look at this. Okay, so here we have a haversian system in longitudinal display. So it's not just a cross section. I see some lamellae. Who remembers what kind of lamellae these are? Circumferential or concentric? Concentric lamellae, right? So I see, so this thing just doesn't want to compress because of the tubes. But now I see some collagen fibers. I see collagen fibers between the lamellae. Now why the heck are these collagen fibers there? If you have a collagen fiber, grab it from end to end and push the ends together, is it going to be easy to move that collagen fiber? Take a thread. Take a thread from end to end and push the ends together. What's going to happen to that thread? It's just going to fold up. Right, doesn't resist compression whatsoever. Same thing for these collagen fibers. They don't resist compression because it's just a fiber. But there's other things we've got to be concerned about, which is what? Tension, stretching of bone. All right, so these collagen fibers resist stretching. And they're in between the lamellae. That might remind you of like belts in a tire or something, like steel belts. And so that resists tension. Right? And because of their arrangement, I see some collagen going in this direction over here, the next lamellae they're going in this direction, and then the next lamellae they're going in like a 90 degree angle once again. When it has this arrangement, not only does it resist tension, but it resists twisting, which is what we call torsion. All right, so these concrete columns over here, we don't see them, but they have some components that are modeled after these collagen fibers, and somebody mentioned that, and that is those metal filaments that we call rebar in concrete. So it helps that column resist tension and twisting a little bit, but not all that well, just a little bit. Collagen in bone does a really good job because it has all of these different layers of collagen. Okay, so that's, I think, what's important. Twisting force. What do we want to call the twisting force? That's what we call torsion. Yeah, torsion. This is what I want to go to. Components. All right, so we have some, what's the composition of the bone that we've talked about so far? Well, we've broken it down into organic components and inorganic components. An organic component is, it really means, it has a connotation of being living molecules that are necessary for life. And I think that's a pretty good definition for this class. Chemistry will have a little bit different definition, physiology a little bit different definition, but An organic compound is important for life. Inorganic compounds, maybe not so important. You find that everywhere around. All right, so organic compounds, cells, are made of organic compounds. And what kind of cells do we have? Well, we have, you talked about an osteocyte, right? An osteocyte we see in mature bone. It keeps bones healthy, keeps a mature bone the proper shape. Right? But that bone has to get there at some point in time. And an osteocyte doesn't build bone. There's another type of cell that does that, and that is an osteoblast. So it's pretty important for you to understand the names of cells. Like, what kind of cell produces melanin? Melanocyte, right? What kind of bone do you, what kind of cell do you see in cartilage? Chondrocyte, right? So you got to know a lot of names of cells in here, not just bones and big things like that. So osteocyte is a bone cell, but in mature bone. An osteoblast is a cell that can build bone, like when a bone is growing, or maybe when a bone is damaged and it has to rebuild some part that is damaged. That's an osteoblast. And then here is an osteoclast. And here is a cell that breaks down bone, breaks down mature bone. All right, so here I see a couple cells that work against each other. What two cells work against each other? They have different purposes. What are the names of these cells? The clast here and the blast. So you might be wondering, well, why do we have these things that work against each other in our body? All right, and this is probably the most important concept even in an anatomy class. Right, when you have things working against each other like that, we call that antagonism. Okay, and that is a very important way that your body maintains balance and precise control of itself. And right here, these blasts and clasts are maintaining proper bone density. So let me use an example. How about your car? Your car has two mechanisms that are antagonistic to each other, and you would never dream of driving your car without both of these antagonistic mechanisms. Can anybody think of what those are? Gas pedal, make your car go. Brake pedal that makes your car stop. All right. And so you see these two things are working against each other, but because of that, you have precise control and balance of your car. You can go wherever you want, stop wherever you want. Like if you only had a gas pedal, that might be a lot of fun. You could get to where you're going, but once you got home, what would happen? Well, you just have to wave goodbye because you couldn't stop, right? So you need that balance through antagonistic mechanisms. Same thing for this bone right here. In order to maintain this bone in a healthy state, the blasts and clasts have to be working just right so that your bones stay exactly the way they should be. So for instance, if this osteoclast is working harder than the osteoblast, what's happening to your bones? You're starting to lose bone, right? And unfortunately, as we get older, all of us, our osteoclasts start to work a little bit faster than our osteoblasts, and as we get older, what happens to our bones? Yeah, they get smaller. They have less calcium. They get brittle. And you all know what that condition's called?
Osteoporosis. When is our class over? Who knows what time our class is over? 12:05? Okay.
I'm having too much fun. Okay, nonetheless. Okay, so osteoporosis is an imbalance of this system right here. The clasts are working a lot harder than the blasts are. Right? When we're younger, they're working exactly the way they should be, and our bones are in really good shape. As a matter of fact, since the clasts are working, right, bones, again, are not like that column over there. They're being remodeled all the time. They're being rebuilt all the time. Every 5 years, you get a completely new skeleton. And it's rebuilt in the way that you use your body. So, for instance, in a muscle right here, you're familiar with that. If you use that muscle all day long, if I walked around all day with a little 2-pound weight even for a month and I did that, what would happen to that muscle? It'd even be bigger than it is right now. Okay, I guarantee you. Okay? So it would respond to that stress, and it would hypertrophy, it would get bigger. But you know what? It's putting stress on these bones. Guess what happens to those bones? Just like the muscle, those bones would hypertrophy and get bigger and stronger, right? And one of the components of this bone is calcium. So it would store more calcium. So as you get older, when you lose calcium, the bones are bigger and stronger to begin with, so you can afford to lose a lot more before they become brittle. So, and this is the reason why people hate this class, is because, why? In order to maintain bones, as a matter of fact, everything in your body, what do you have to do? You have to exercise,
Okay? Plus, you need proper diet, right? You need calcium, you need phosphate in your diet. All right, so in order to maintain a nice, healthy body, you need diet and exercise. Not diet in terms of starvation, but eating the proper nutrients and then exercise, because your body is built to exercise. Okay. Sorry about that. That's nice. Nobody threw anything at me. Okay. So this organic compound, let's get back to organic compounds. You got these cells. Well, an osteoprogenitor cell, you know, is a bone cell. That's a stem cell. It can be converted into any one of these cells over here, depending on whatever the demands of the body are. Right? So that's a precursor cell, stem cell. And we find these in the periosteum and endosteum. So there's a balance between osteoclasts and osteoblasts in the periosteum and endosteum. For instance, in the endosteum, this is where the osteoclasts are working. So that makes the cavity inside the cell, inside the bone. Okay, but the bone would get weaker if that was the only thing happening. The osteoblasts are in the periosteum on the outside of the bone, making the bone grow in this dimension, from right to left or anterior to posterior, with those two cells. Okay, another organic compound are these collagen fibers, because they're proteins. They're made from organic compounds. And what good is collagen? It resists stretching, and it resists twisting, torsion and tension. That's why they're in there. Okay, let's talk about the inorganic compounds. Well, these things are minerals that we have in bones. You're familiar with them. You know calcium is there. And in order for calcium to be in your bones, what do you have to have? You have to have calcium in your diet, right? Your body can't make calcium from any place. It has to be in your diet. Same thing for a phosphate. Your body can't make that. That means these are essential minerals. You have to have them in your diet or you'll be deficient in them. That's a part of nutrition to know where you find these things. All right, so calcium and phosphate are not just there as calcium phosphate, but they're put together in certain ways, and people talk about the proper chemical entity in bone that makes bone strong, and that's called hydroxyapatite. All right, you're going to hear that term, and I just want you to know that hydroxyapatite is a special combination of what? Calcium and phosphorus put together, right? So you need both of those elements to make strong bone. And what does that do? It provides hardness. It resists compression. So you put organic and inorganic compounds together, what do you get? You get a bone that can resist tension. You get a bone that can resist torsion. And you also get a bone that can resist compression. It's pretty nifty how all that stuff has been put together, right, to resist all these different kind of forces that are applied to a bone. All right, so here's that statement right there. So make sure you know what components in bone resist torsion, compression, and tension. And know if they're inorganic or organic compounds. That will really help your understanding of bone.
We need to know the name of these inorganic compounds.
Inorganic, yeah. Calcium, inorganic phosphate. And probably you should know hydroxyapatite is the real chemical formulation of calcium and phosphate that makes bone strong in terms of compression. Hydroxyapatite. Right? If you go to a nutrition store, talk to people on the street, and you ask, what's important for strong bones? They're going to say calcium. That's great. Have they heard of hydroxyapatite? Maybe not. But, you know, some of you will end up in a clinic or hospital or something, and guess what? People use hydroxyapatite, and you know they're referring to bones, right? Okay. Bone formation and growth. Two different kinds of bone growth. One is called intramembranous ossification. How do you know that intramembranous ossification has to do with bones? Because you see ossify here, ossification, right? So ossify has something to do with bone, but it also has something to do with a membrane. Endochondrial ossification. Oh, we're mixing a couple terms. What are the terms we're mixing here? Bone and cartilage. Bone and cartilage, right? So here's a kind of bone formation that happens within cartilage. Intramembranous is a kind of ossification, right, which is a conversion of a membrane into bone that happens within a membrane. These happen in a couple different locations. Right? Most bones of the skull are what we call flat bones. Flat bones usually are developed from intramembranous ossification. There has to be a membrane there first, not cartilage, but a membrane. So a fetus, where their skull is going to be, has what? Has cartilage or membranes? Has membranes, right? Their skull is really just a membrane. Membrane is not very strong. All right? And then that membrane starts to ossify. It becomes bone. What kind of cell builds a bone?
Osteoblasts, right? So then osteoblasts are in that membrane, starts to build bone matrix, right, because it's a connective tissue, and then that skull is formed. Okay. Now, these membranes don't completely disappear when a child is born. We call that a neonate, and that's really a good thing, right, because the birth canal, which is what, a woman's vagina, is not big enough for a head to pass through it, if it was a skull, right, if it couldn't deform. So when a baby is born, sorry about that, I'll pick that up in just a second. When a baby is born, the head has to squish down a little bit, go through the birth canal, and then kind of pops back the way it should be, right? Because the skull has not formed completely, it has these pieces of membranes between the bones that are there, and they're called fontanelles, right? So why are there fontanelles there? Number one, for parturition, which is birth, so the head can squish down. The second thing is that a nervous tissue grows a lot faster than any other kind of tissue in a neonate. So when a neonate's brain is growing, it grows so fast, if there was bone there, the bone couldn't grow as fast, the brain would become compressed. So as the brain starts to expand after birth, the skull can expand very easily because the membranes can stretch. So that's another important reason. All right, but there's a downside. What's the downside to that, of having those fontanelles, those membranes still there after birth? They're fragile. Yeah, they're not bone. They're fragile, and I always used to think, well, they're fragile to what? Puncture wounds, right? Certainly. You don't want them, your little babies, to play with Dobermans or St. Bernard dogs or anything like that. But not just puncture wounds, but any kind of twisting, any kind of compression or tension will damage the skull, and chances are will damage the brain. So shaking a baby, ooh, bad thing, right? Not just dropping a baby on the floor, but shaking a baby or throwing him up in the air, catching him or her, right? It's dangerous because of those fontanelles. And in lab, you're going to see where these fontanelles are. They're also called soft spots. You're aware of that. And here's a strange thing. When I realized this, I was just floored, right? Because I always knew a neonate had them. But how long in your life did you have fontanelles? For up to 2 years. 2 years, right? And I don't really consider a two-year-old a baby anymore, but they still have fontanelles, right? So you got to be careful with, right, really young people. What does postpartum mean? That's a good thing. It's not like postmortem. Postpartum means after being born, right? Okay. Endochondrial ossification happens in most bones, like long bones. And that just means that the bone, where it's going to be in your body, and the shape of that bone is built in a cartilage model, right? So it's first cartilage, and then that cartilage is converted into bone. Anybody remember what that process is called when something is converted into bone? That's called ossification, right? And since it happens within cartilage model, first we call that endochondrial ossification. All right, I do want to talk a little bit about that. Endochondrial ossification. I got some slides. Where does this start? Okay. Let's look at the slide on the right. Here we have a bone, before it's a bone, and here's cartilage, right? So here's hyaline cartilage. We've got chondrocytes in there. And what does it look like this bone is going to become? Does it look like it's going to be a flat bone, or irregular bone, long bone, or what? You get the sense that it's going to be a long bone, right? Here's going to be epiphysis, and the epiphysis down over here. All right, so it is cartilage. But sooner or later, in the periosteum, there are cells, osteoblasts, that start to build the bone matrix as a collar all the way around the cell, mid-diaphysis. Right, so it forms this ring. And then also very in the center of this cartilage model, there are osteoblasts that begin to build bone matrix in the very center. All right, so this is what we call the primary ossification center, the one right smack in the middle of the bone. And it produces more bone, more bone, more bone, until you get even a cavity. So osteoclasts then become activated and maintain this cavity. And then, a little bit later, I see another ossification center occurring in the epiphyses, both proximal and distal epiphyses. These are what we call the secondary ossification centers. And then, of course, this grows, and it also almost meets up with the primary ossification center, right? But not quite, because what do we have right in the middle? This leftover hyaline cartilage, and then it becomes an ossification center until puberty, and this is how the bone grows in length. right, from this epiphyseal plate in the distal and the epiphyseal plate in the proximal epiphysis right here. So that's how that cartilage got there, right? So it's just when the primary and secondary ossification centers meet at this particular location. Right, and the bone grows in diameter from this bone collar right here, not the primary or secondary ossification centers. Sometimes we call that appositional growth, when the inside layer disappears as the outside layer gets thicker. Okay, and that's how a bone grows in diameter. Let's see, what other things do I want to talk about? Appositional growth, bone repair. Okay, well, since bone is a living tissue, it heals itself very fast. It has living cells, but not only that, what about blood supply? Does it have blood supply? Ah, look at this nutrient foramen right here. What's going through there? Blood vessel, right? So bone is highly vascular. You break a mature bone, of course, hemorrhage is a serious condition because bones are highly vascular. That's the bad thing. But the good thing is, after a bone is broken, since it has plenty of nutrients and oxygen, it can rebuild itself very nicely. And it has still all those osteoblasts and osteoclasts that can do a really good job. So a bone can heal, if treated properly, in about 4 weeks, which is really fast compared to a tendon, which might not ever repair itself, right? Okay, so what happens when you break a bone? Well, fortunately, you have osteoclasts that can go into that fracture, and what's the job of an osteoclast again? Breaks down bone. So all the bone fragments, which are really sharp, not quite as sharp as razor blades, but they can lacerate things, right? Osteoclasts go in there and get rid of all those bone fragments. It breaks those bone fragments down into what? The building blocks for new bones, which is what? Calcium, phosphate, and even the collagen gets converted into amino acids, the building block for proteins. So osteoclasts go in there. Fibroblasts then enter that fracture and take some of those amino acids and make collagen fibers out of it, and it kind of glues all the pieces of bone together with collagen fibers. That's what we call a callus. Callus is not as strong as solid bone. It can be damaged again. So what do we like to do for bones? We don't want to damage that callus. We put a bone, a broken bone, in a cast, right, to help protect that fracture area until those fibroblasts get in there. And stabilize the fracture. And after that, then the osteoclasts come in and start to lay down new bone matrix. And it has plenty of oxygen and nutrients to do that. So that's basically how a bone gets repaired. Sometimes we call that remodeling. Okay? But remember, even bones remodel themselves even without fracturing. How could you remodel a bone? By exercise. That's right. Put tension on that bone, it's going to get bigger and stronger. It's going to protect you from osteoporosis, right? And that will affect both males and females, mostly females, because typically their bones are thinner and smaller compared to males, right? So males are a little bit more protected from osteoporosis, but it still happens to them. So if you're a person, whether you're male or female, if you have thinner, small bones as compared to big, strong bones, like some people, people with thinner bones are more susceptible to osteoporosis, which means what? They said exercise more. Sorry about that. Okay, make sure you sign the sign-in sheet. Next time is the lecture exam.